This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome on into Sports Talk, and it's Friday, March 28th here. We're getting ready for LSU baseball taking on Mississippi State. No word about a weather delay yet, but we have seen that the women's softball team's matchup has been a delay. They were set for a 5:30 first pitch. We'll see if things can clear up in time for the Tigers and Bulldogs to go at it on the diamond in Alec Box Stadium. That is scheduled to be a 6:30 first pitch. Meanwhile, 6:30 over on 870 AM, we'll have pregame coverage of the Pelicans matchup against the Golden State Warriors this evening. That is a 7 o'clock tip-off in the Smoothie King Center. Not much talk about the Pels this week. It had a really odd schedule where they played Monday and then were off until Friday.
Yeah. Is the season still going on?
They got 9 games left, Jeff.
Oof. 9? Is there? If you like strike a deal with the NBA, can you like get those cut in half?
You know, we need the old video game simulate rest of season.
Yeah. You know who's not simulating the rest of the season? Taylor Jenkins. He's actually, I guess he would be simulating the rest of the season because the Grizzlies coach got fired. They're like the seed in the West right now.
Right. Seems like something else is a brewing over there.
Yeah, it's something. It's got to be something beyond, well, they're just not playing very well. Because they're playing reasonably well. I think they're 49-35, something like that. I think the NBA, of all sports, the NBA is the most notorious for coaches getting fired when things are going well, seemingly, versus not getting fired when things are going poorly. Right? Like, I don't think Willie Green's going to get fired this year. And this is like the worst season we've seen the Pelicans have in 20 years. The Grizzlies went through this last year. They could have fired Taylor Jenkins last year if it was going so poorly. They chose not to. They waited until it started going well. And now they're firing him. So it's got to be something else. But like, you see that happen. Like, Mike Budenholzer for the Bucks got fired midseason of, handful of years back. And they went to the playoffs. And it was an interim coach in the playoffs. Dwayne Casey got fired after winning Coach of the Year with the Raptors. Like, it's just a weird dynamic in the NBA. Ime Udoka got fired after going to the finals with the Celtics. Obviously, there was some background information there that led to that. So there's got to be something. It's hard to believe that it was just like, we don't get along with this guy, when it's like, you could have just waited until the end of the season. It's almost here. There's only a couple weeks left. And you have playoff ambitions. Like, you have, you're probably gonna miss the play-in entirely, and you're just gonna have an interim coach. It's just so strange.
Two coaches did get extensions today. That was over in the football ranks, though. In college, Deion Sanders landing a $54 million extension with Colorado, and then just saw that John Harbaugh reached an extension with the Baltimore Ravens through 2028. Yeah. Will the Baltimore ever live up to any of their high expectations?
Yeah, the Deion Sanders contract is kind of fascinating. So it's 5 years, $54 million, $10 million in the first two seasons, $11 million in the next two, $12 million in year five, when you would assume he's not even there because he's going to go coach somewhere else. It was reached with 3 years remaining on his existing 5-year, $29.5 million deal. But with these contracts, the number to look at is always the buyout, because, you know, Deion, like, this contract for the Colorado is like, we want to make sure that you stay here for at least another year, maybe hopefully two or three. So how do you do that? You make it so he's going to have to pay you a pretty hefty chunk of change if he decides to go somewhere else. So what's the buyout? If Deion Sanders takes another job in the NFL or another NCAA team, his buyout is $12 million if he terminates the deal on or before December 31st, 2025. So that would be the end of this year. $10 million in 2026, $6 million in 2027, $4 million in 2028, and $3 million in 2029. So, you know, he's making a lot of money on this deal, but it kind of locks him in where, hey, if I want to leave, if I get, you know, a godfather offer from an NFL team after the 2025 season, he's going to be on the hook for $10 million back to Colorado. So right. It's kind of an interesting thing. Whereas like some coaches, it's the opposite way. Like Ed O's contract, it was like they had to pay him to leave. You know, I don't think Deion's going to get fired anytime soon. So it's kind of a different scenario.
Checking in on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talk and text line, Jeff, somebody that is interested in what the Pelicans are doing. Jimmy in Gretna, what you got for us this Friday, man?
Hey, man. Yeah, I'm bummed about the rain tomorrow. The Irish Channel, you know, it seems like this St. Patrick stuff lasts for like a month.
Yeah.
Got canceled. But hey, put a quick spotlight. Go out to NOLA Gold Rugby. I went to a game recently, and I actually had a good time. They're tomorrow night. Looks like the rain should be clear for that. And, yes, there's an Irish parade Sunday in Gretna for anybody looking for some free groceries at noon. But let me say this about the Pelicans. Let me say this real quick, guys. Pelicans tonight, Golden State. Typically, I call you guys up saying it's a $1 ticket, and it has been this year. Steph Curry tonight is in the house. He's coming back from an injury. It looks like he's going to play. Tickets are like $40 just to get in the door. So,
wow.
Listen, at this point, it's going to be a lot of people from Algiers and West Wego wearing Curry jerseys and all that. I get that. And there's not much to celebrate. I get that. And really, do we really want to win at this point? Maybe not. But we're kind of in purgatory, though, now, guys, because we're probably not going to get the number one overall pick, get Cooper Flagg, this and that. We're probably going to be around 5, 6, 7. Is there anybody that you're seeing in the tournament or otherwise that piques your interest as a possibility if we're around 5, 6, or 7 picking in the NBA draft?
Thanks, Jimmy. And, yeah, that thing with the Pels, too, right now, for this evening at least, you've got no Zion Williamson, no C.J. McCollum in action either.
Yeah, the Pelicans aren't going to win that game. You know, and the thing is, like you said,
do they really want to right now?
Probably not, and I'm okay with it. But the thing is, like, Warriors fans travel, and I will tell you why. Because a $40 ticket to a Warriors game doesn't exist. You can't sit in the nosebleeds for $40, right? So I think to a certain extent, it's probably cheaper to get a plane ticket and a hotel room and fly to New Orleans for a Warriors game than it is to go to, I don't know the name of their arena, but to go watch.
It used to be Oracle Arena, not anymore.
Yeah, I don't think it's Oracle anymore.
No,
but either way, like it's probably about the same at the end of the day. And you get to do New Orleans at the same time. And that's why, like, a lot of these, like, when the Celtics come down here, like, it's mostly Celtics fans in the season like this, because it's the best deal they're going to get to watch their team in person. And, yeah, and then you get a trip out of the deal. So that's like, I remember vividly, this was when Kevin Durant was on the Warriors. I was at a game, and there was a fast break dunk. It was a close game, and Durant had a fast break dunk. And the cheer in the building, you would think you were in Oakland. I think they were still playing in Oakland at that point. So that's kind of what it is. But I don't know. I have a hard time nailing down this draft class, in part because I haven't gotten to watch any of these Rutgers games, because Rutgers was terrible,
right?
But they happen to have two
players in the top 10, right?
Two lottery picks in Dylan Harper and who was the other guy? I've lost
Ace
it.
Bailey.
Ace Bailey, right? So like, you're gonna have two of the top picks that I haven't watched one time, because no one's ever watching any Rutgers games. So it's tough. VJ Edgecombe, I think, is an interesting guy, but 6'5". I guess the question is, what do the Pelicans need? And what the Pelicans need is Cooper Flagg. Like, I don't think, I have a hard time seeing the Wizards passing off of that, but I did also watch the Wizards allow 160 points in regulation last night, so they're not putting up too much of a fight about just about anything right now. But I don't know. I'm kind of fascinated to see if, like, Cooper Flagg tries to play the, hey, I could go back to Duke game, don't draft me, Washington.
There's been some of those rumors flowing out there that he's going to return to school. We'll see.
Even with the sprained ankle, probably didn't do that idea any favors. But with NIL now, like, he's probably making enough money that you could justify, like, hey, this is such a bad situation. But the problem is the number one team in the draft is always going to be a bad situation, you know? It's not like the only time like this when the Celtics got the number one pick and drafted Jason Tatum after, you know, going to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's like that happens once in a blue moon, but you're almost always going to go to a Washington or a Charlotte. So I don't know, but I have a hard time finding anything in this draft class that's going to move the needle for the Pelicans.
You mentioned Rutgers, and that just so happens to be where this particular mock drafts have the Saints going with Ace Bailey, the shooting guard, small forward from there. We'll have to obviously wait and see what happens and how the ping pong balls, lottery balls, fall for the Saints, for the Pelicans. Sorry.
Yeah, you said Pelicans a couple, or Saints a couple times. Yeah, we'll see.
I got Saints draft on my mind because that's our next guest.
Yeah, I need to dive in a little bit more. I don't have enough insight on this yet.
Let us take a break right now. When we get back, we'll get into the NFL draft with former Tulane linebacker Sam Bruckhouse right here on WWL. Stay tuned. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Our NFL draft countdown continues. We're just 27 days away from round one kicking off. And this year, the event will be held in Green Bay to help us talk about how the big boards are looking right now and also talking some Saints black and gold action. Sam Bruckhouse, who is a Sumer Sports senior NFL analyst and data scientist, also a former Tulane linebacker. Sam, thanks so much for joining us today. How's it going? Guess we lost Sam already here on the line. Great, great start to this one.
An inauspicious beginning to this interview. I think we should be able to get him back, but we'll find out. Did you see this thing on? I want to ask Sam about this when we get him back. Did you see this thing on Tet McMillan? It's like this kind of like weird voyeur video about how he doesn't study film.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's not a good look. Not exactly a gas mask situation.
I got you. We got Sam back on the line.
We got Sam. How you doing, Sam? You back?
You can ask him about that right off the bat here. How's it going, Sam?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Hey, guys, I was listening in to y'all's earlier segment about the Grizzlies. I was just as shocked, but I was teaching a class at Tulane, actually, yesterday. I'm in for the book fair.
Nice.
And I was looking at their net rating, and they're under teams like the Timberwolves, the Clippers, the Warriors, the Rockets. And so maybe, you know, like maybe that projection went into the decision that despite having a better record than a lot of those teams, when it comes to the analytics, they're below them.
Yeah, but why not just ride it out to the end of the season if it's performance there? Like, that's the part that doesn't make sense. Like, yeah, you could have done the same thing and not kind of thrown the rest of your season into the wood chipper. You there, Sam?
We got to get Sam a cell phone deal.
Oh, no. What's happening? Is he okay? Maybe
the storms are rolling in and it's affecting service.
Maybe that's we'll find out. I think it might be an internet thing. My internet's down, so it could be us. Maybe we are destroying the connection.
Ooh, us?
No, we'll see. But yeah, so back to the Tet
McMillan stuff. Yeah,
you know, it's kind of like this impromptu video of him kind of just sitting. It looks like the Arizona dining hall talking about how he doesn't really watch football and. And he doesn't really watch film, and it's not a great look. Sam, you there?
Yeah, I think I'm back now. Can you hear me now?
are you just driving through tunnels persistently? Is that what's going on?
No, I'm sitting in a hotel right now, so hopefully I guess the Wi-Fi will get figured out or something. But glad to be with y'all.
Gotcha. We'll get it going. Sam, you know, I'm just curious. Did you? See this Tet McMillan video that's been circulating of him kind of saying he doesn't watch film and you know, like he watches it with his position group and that's about it. I'm just curious if you have an opinion on is that something that you think should sway opinions of teams at this point in the process when stuff like that comes to light?
Man, it's so tough because, number one, you look at the numbers and really no one is good at drafting. I work for a former Dirty Bird, Thomas Dimitroff, who was going up against the Saints years and years, and him and Mickey Loomis also are two of the better drafters, but, you know, they've been at it for a long time and they've been able to prove their philosophy over time, and that's why they were both so long tenured. Not everybody gets that luxury. And so it's difficult to pick up the secret sauce. Obviously, within a team, you want to know that everyone is trying their hardest. But when it comes down to it, I think Tet McMillan put his resume out there on the field. Maybe you train him up how to manage the media a little bit more. But it's difficult for me to say that he should just tank in April after he played multiple years at Arizona, was very productive there.
Yeah, it is a weird time because, like, we go from an entire year of watching the film and the film's the only thing that matters. Then you graduate to, oh, these numbers are the only thing that matters, right? Suddenly, oh, he runs that four, you know, does this thing that he's never going to do in a game, but he does it really well. So right. We get really excited. And, you know, Will Campbell's arms measure at 32 5/8, but then wait, actually, they got the tape measure wrong. It's 33 inches. Suddenly he's a tackle again. I don't know. I guess, you know, how much, when you look at this process, do we take too much time looking at these measurables and not enough time going back and watching the tape? How do you kind of feel the process goes in that sense?
So I hate being the wet blanket, man. In fact, I've been thinking about it basically since the combine of why I kind of have to poo-poo some of these measurements and stuff like that. But like you mentioned, you know, talking about the 40 times of all these guys, it came up with Xavier Restrepo, slot receiver out of Miami this week. Like, we have software that can pick up how fast players are running
right.
just from his tape. And his tape has been there since, like, well, what, December at the least? At least since November, and he's been a kind of older guy, so we have multiple years of tape on him. So when a number is strange, we can go back and look at him actually playing. And obviously we want to ask a question about the hamstring. Maybe that comes up in a draft meeting. That's probably salient information. But like you said, particularly with regards to LSU's Will Campbell, I was talking to his trainer, Duke Manyweather, on our Sumer Sports Show podcast, which you can get wherever you listen to podcasts. And he immediately, no questions asked, put, this dude's a tackle. He produced at the highest level from the time he was an 18-year-old at LSU playing against the best edge rushers in the nation at tackle for 4 years or 3 years. And so it's really kind of baffling when we start talking about quarters of inches of arm length being able to inhibit someone from playing a position they played for a long time and produced at for a very long time as well.
Sam, when you're looking where the Saints are in the NFL draft, the first round, having the 9th overall selection, man, there have been mock drafts all over the place. Early on, I felt like Tet McMillan was a popular pick. And lately now, I feel like the last two I've seen have Shedeur Sanders making it all the way down to the Saints at pick number 9. Mel Kiper Jr.'s mock draft had them selecting Jackson Dart. Just your overall feel of what you think will be on the board for the Saints at number 9 and where you think the black and gold should go.
So I've done two mock drafts now. The first one I tried to make a little bit more realistic of what probably actually will happen. The second one I tried to think, what if pressure starts bending some of these teams who really want to get a quarterback? And my true belief as it sits right now is that you're going to have to go up and get a quarterback really quickly. Because the quarterback pressure in this league is so high, and there's really two teams at the top in the Titans and the Browns who kind of hold the keys and may be willing to trade back. It seems like in recent days the Titans have really fallen in love with Cam Ward. At least that's what reports are saying. But I think in order to go ahead and go get a quarterback, you're going to have to get in that top 3 to 5 range. Or else you'll have to reach on a Jackson Dart, a la the Falcons, you know, pulling Michael Penix all the way up to a first-round pick. So I think you probably will have to spend assets to get into the top 5 picks to get a quarterback. There's the answer for that right now. In terms of the Saints, there's a lot of needs. I think Tet McMillan would fill a need. We saw the state in which the Saints wide receivers were in midseason after some injuries. They do have two guys that are revered in the community of, you know, really being productive guys, Olave and Shaheed, but injuries have saddled them. And then I just think you gotta look at rebuilding that defense. Right now, I think Will Johnson may be a pick. That's my pick currently of who I think they may go with if the cards fall with quarterbacks going early. I think that's an excellent cornerback who could fit well into new defensive coordinator Brandon Staley's scheme.
Yeah, you know, this draft reminds me a lot of 2016. And, you know, not only because that was the year the Titans did trade out from number 1 overall, but even the quarterbacks in general, you know, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz. Kind of feels like there's some polarization in the within those two quarterbacks. The way that I feel like there's some polarization on the top two this year. Whether you want to say it's Jackson Dart or Shadu Sanders or whatever, I feel like we all agree Cam Ward is that guy and the guy behind him. You know, so what do you? What would you be doing if you were the Giants right now? Like sitting there with 2 1-year deals and. A coach that feels like he's on the hot seat, a GM that feels like he's on the hot seat. Would you be going up and getting one of these quarterbacks, or would you be sitting back and saying, "Yeah, I'll wait till next year"?
So this is where analyst Sammy B disagrees with kind of the political Sammy B a little bit, because analyst me wants to say, if you don't got the quarterback situation figured out, then you are in hot water. And they've already kind of taken two shots, Jameis Winston, Russell Wilson, two players that have shown that they can be productive in this league, but for whatever reason have fallen out with really impressive coaches. You think about Jameis and Russell, both of those guys have fallen out with Sean Payton, Pete Carroll, Mike Tomlin. Like, these aren't Joe Schmo coaches. These are guys who are Coach of the Year candidates every year. And so there's obviously probably limited upside with those guys. We know who they are. I think you just go ahead and take the shot on a quarterback at 3 and maybe consider trading up if you really like Cam Ward or Shadur Sanders. But they're also in a good position now, having two veteran quarterbacks, to probably wait if they do like a guy like a Jackson Dart or a Dylan Gabriel or a Jalen Milroe, who they can probably get in the second or third round. They're probably positioned to do that. But I think if I'm them, you know, a quarterback is probably analytically the best place for them to go day one or day two. Now, politically, I don't know about that. Obviously, you have it set up with the veterans. You could probably go in and feel okay. And a little known fact about them was their defensive front was actually quite good last year. We're talking about Bobby Okereke, Dexter Lawrence, Brian Burns, Kevon Thibodeau. These are all big names, and they were one of the better teams in terms of getting pressure on the quarterback last year. With a couple of tweaks, they may be able to have a good defense. So I think the options need to be either go with Travis Hunter at 3 if you can't get pick 1 and 2 a quarterback, and quarterbacks do go 1 and 2, or figure out some way to address a third quarterback into the quarterback room.
One player that's been, I feel like, all over mock draft boards and really curious to see where Ashton Jeanty ends up out of Boise State. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks, you know, had connections with him to the black and gold just because, obviously, the head coach, Kellen Moore, was a Boise State guy as well. There's a little bit of a need there running back. I hope this team doesn't go that direction, though, in the first round of this draft, at least. But just curious for you, where do you think a guy like Jeanty slots in the first round?
Yeah, we had a great conversation on our SiriusXM Sumer Sports show, which I think may be finishing up right now, but you can get it on demand on the SiriusXM app. And we were discussing today when we were recording really what the value of a guy who has the perfect resume, which Ashton Jeanty pretty much does have. And I got to give you kudos for picking up the 2016 draft, because that was also the draft that Zeke Elliott was in, who had a pretty perfect resume as well. Here's the items that are really key from the process analytical perspective. The first is, if you are drafting a running back in the first round, he will be paid as one of the best running backs in the league. That's just the way the market works. He needs to be a guy who immediately is in Pro Bowl conversations, and that's very hard to hit on in the draft, and it causes a lot of problems, and that's why a lot of teams wait to the second or third rounds. The second item is you probably only got the first 3 to 5 years to get maximum effort at them. We saw the Steelers move on from Najee Harris. The subset of guys who have been able to contribute long-term is very limited. You can only think of like maybe 3 or 4 in the league right now: Kamara, Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry. After that, it starts getting a little questionable of those older guys. And so those two things make the running back position so uncertain that I personally wouldn't feel really good drafting especially anyone not named Ashton Jeanty, and including Ashton Jeanty in the first round as an analyst.
Yeah, fun fact, when the Titans traded that pick in 2016, one of the picks they got was number 45 overall, which they used on the pride of Alabama, Derrick Henry. So anyway, just saying, if you want to keep going back to that 2016 draft. But, you know, I do find it interesting. A lot of people said, like, hey, Kellen Moore found out firsthand that if you have one of those superstar running backs, you can go win a Super Bowl. And my response to that is usually, Well, Kellen Moore found out firsthand if you go sign the superstar running back from the team that drafted him and failed him for 5 years, 6 years. Yeah, that's a much better scenario. The Bucs found that out too with Leonard Fournette. So, and I kind of feel like that my philosophy on running backs is like, if you are a playoff team plus star running mm-hmm. back, you can elevate to a Super Bowl team. If you are a bad team plus superstar running back, you are just a bad team with a superstar running back.
Yeah, I think what Kellen Moore probably learned the most is that it's great to have two all-pro tackles on your team.
Yes,
and so I think
true. His
evaluation of the young tackles, Talese Fuaga and Trevor Penning, is going to really direct the way that the Saints go in this draft, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, and how he wants to operate this offense as well.
Back with that tackle conversation, curious how you feel with the rankings. I've seen some folks believe that Armon Membu is actually a better prospect than Will Campbell from LSU, and just curious your thoughts on that one.
So, again, we had Duke Manyweather on. We asked him all these questions. I personally love the production of Campbell, and this is just a guy that you can put on an island. A lot of dropbacks from Jaden Daniels and Garrett Nussmeier in that offense. A lot of him having to protect for a long time. I personally think that you can probably address the left tackle position by getting Will Campbell. Membu, on the other side, is probably a true right tackle, a guy that you'd be looking at, an athletic profile that looks like a Penei Sewell or something like that. I'm a little more questionable of his production than Will Campbell. So currently, I think Campbell's probably good. A guy who's gotten lost in the shuffle, though, Kelvin Banks. He played for Steve Sarkisian. A lot of people think that Steve Sarkisian out there at Texas, people forget that he was the offense coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons. That's an NFL pro-style system that he's running out there at Texas. And I think Kelvin Banks is a guy who's kind of fell a little bit, but I feel like he has some juice at left tackle as well, having played at a school like Texas in the SEC. I feel like he may be a guy who ends up sneaking into kind of the top 15 as well.
Top tier info from you, Sam. Appreciate it. What can folks find out at Sumer Sports right now they should go check out?
Yeah, so check out our podcast, the Draft FM podcast, the Sumer Sports Show. Two podcasts I'm on. You can catch them wherever podcasts are. And also check out sumersports.com. A lot of great information that we're writing every week.
Appreciate it, Sam. Be talking to you soon. Have a great one, man.
Thanks for bearing with me on the phone troubles.
No worries. Thanks, at all. Sam Brookhouse, former Tulane linebacker, also Sumer Sports senior NFL analyst and data scientist, joining us right there. We'll talk to him more before the NFL draft kicks off. Right now, we're going to take a break, though. Be back with more sports talk right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Want to tell every you college basketball fans out there, we are your home for March Madness. If you can't get enough of the men's NCAA basketball tournament, you can catch all the Sweet 16 action on our sister station, the Bet 92.9 FM and 1350 AM. Just look for the Bet New Orleans, also on the Odyssey app. Looking at the games in action tonight over there, Ole Miss taking on Michigan State, Kentucky and Tennessee, Michigan versus Auburn, and Purdue against Houston. In the women's Sweet 16 action, we've got the women's of LSU going to be in action against NC State this evening. That's a 6:30 tip-off that you can watch on ESPN. Right now, I'm checking out here South Carolina and Maryland. Oh, those Gamecocks up 64-60, 33 seconds left in that matchup.
They're going to win.
They just find a way to get it done.
Don't bet against South Carolina. Right? Yeah, I mean, there's not a ton of upsets in with the women's tournament. Right? Like you kind of can – it's like that's why filling out a bracket is kind of useless, because it's almost always chalk. Like LSU upsetting NC State on a 3-2 line is like the closest you'll get to like an upset.
Yeah.
Like you rarely see, you know, 8-9s winning. South Carolina, they're going to be one seeds in the Final Four. You know, that's where you're at.
Yeah, looking at the rest of the women's in Sweet 16 action today, it was number 2 Duke taking down number 3 UNC 47-38. Like you mentioned, LSU number 3 taking on number 2 NC State. And then the late game this evening, number 1 UCLA against a 5 seed in Mississippi, Ole Miss.
Yeah, right, like a 5 beating a 4 is the upset of this tournament to this point.
We're taking a break here on Sports Talk, returning with more right after this. We'll keep an eye on the LSU baseball game, see if there's any weather updates on that. Coming back with more right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. We have gotten word from the LSU baseball folks. They are currently in a delay due to inclement weather in the area, and it will not be a 6:30 first pitch. Further updates will come once a new first pitch time is determined over in Alec Box Stadium. Curious to see when that weather will clear out. Coach Jay Johnson did mention last night that they were expecting, if things were to be moved with this game, they weren't going to bump them up in time. It would be later on in the evening. So they do expect, I think, this whatever sell is going on in Baton Rouge right now to clear out eventually for this game to get started. Then they definitely want to play tonight, because whatever with the SEC rules, a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, you can't carry over into Sunday.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit odd. And even Jay Johnson mentioned that's got to change.
Build a roof. Build a roof. I'm sorry.
Taking a break for top of the hour news here on WWL. We'll be right back with more right after this, so stay tuned on WWL.